Hi everyone, and welcome to Intuitive Awakening. My name is Dina. Thank you for joining me so much this week on this week's episode. This week I have a lovely guest. Her name is Shayna Olmsted. Shayna is a psychotherapist. She earned her Bachelor's of Science in Health Psychology and Spirituality from Bastyr. She completed her MA in psychology, and she uses a holistic integrative approach to therapy, addressing the body, mind, and authentic self for each client. She integrates mindfulness, intuition, visualization, and breathing exercises into her work with her clients. So Shayna, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm so excited.
I'm excited for you to be on here as well. So can we kick this off by you explaining to the audience what drew you to psychotherapy?
Yeah. So my story is I was a stay-at-home mom in the suburbs, and I was in a marriage, but I wasn't super happy. So I started exploring therapy on my own, as well as doing other things like going to yoga and reading spiritual books and all of those kinds of things. And then it was around 2004, and I had a spiritual awakening. You know, all of that stuff I was doing kind of set the foundation, but it was just an all of a sudden thing for me, a big download of information where everything just looked different and felt different in a really beautiful way. And so then I was super inspired to share that with other people. I was feeling so different and so much better than I used to that I was like, everybody needs to know about this. And it felt like, and it still does, it felt like it's my calling to help people more in the mainstream be a bridge between traditional psychotherapy and the more intuitive and spiritual and energetic aspects of it. So I like to work with a lot of people that some are in the tech world or people that just haven't heard of spirituality or awakening, or they think it's a little weird and I present as very normal. So I'm a really good way, you know, to introduce these things to people and help them adjust their lens a little bit too, so that they can have a deeper, more rich experience of the world. So it's so fun.
So one thing I wanted to ask you, because you are saying that you've had this awakening, and I found that many people over the past probably 10 to 15 years have kind of felt an inner calling to assist, you know, others in this, you know, quote unquote, great awakening. And what was the actual experience like for you? Was it just an intuitive awakening? What was the actual impetus for that awakening?
Oh, I know. And it's so strange because everybody has different experiences. And mine, it's so interesting. And you don't know how it feels until you've gone through it, right? And for some people, it can be really gradual. And mine was a gradual beginning, but then the actual moment, like I said, was very sudden. So I was in the marriage, like I said. I wasn't very happy. We weren't getting along very well. I had two little kids at the time. So I had a two-year-old and a newborn, which was very stressful in addition to, you know, the relationship not going well. And so we were actually, my husband and I, we were in the garage and the kids were inside. I think they were already in bed. It was pretty late at night and we were having an argument. And then all of a sudden he just turned around and he said all these complimentary things to me. And usually he was kind of critical of who I was and mothering and all kinds of things. And I hadn't really found my life calling at that point. So he would kind of, you know, tell me to get a job or that kind of thing. And so in this moment, in this argument, somehow he turned it around and he was just telling me the actual truth of his soul that his defenses usually covered up. Like, I think you're amazing. I think you're magical. I think you're a wonderful mother. I think you can help the world in a really big way, you know, and all these wonderful, beautiful things that I think my soul just needed to hear at that moment. And so what I think looking back now, it raised my vibration so much. And I didn't even understand what that meant at the time. But I think it just allowed me to lift to this level where all the things I had already been doing and reading just clicked into my cells, and it just all made sense. And so I felt this energy buzzing through my body, you know, from my head to my toe, like a motor almost. And I know that's always what's happening in our bodies, but we're not always aware of it. But I was really aware of it, you know, for probably a few weeks in a row. It's still there, but it has faded definitely over time. So the energy flowing through my body was what I was aware of. I just knew into my bones that we're all connected. We're all one. There are no problems in the world, you know, and everything just made sense. So does that make any sense? It's really hard to explain, but
it is very hard.
Okay. Yeah. Have you had that same experience? I'm sure.
Yes, definitely. And like you said, it is over time, and it's really difficult to sum up in like 2 minutes, like many years worth of, you know, growth.
Totally. But it's amazing how it's all of a sudden at the same time. And I could relate to people that were like born again Christians, you know, where you just kind of feel this difference all of a sudden. And I see it differently than they do. You know, I respect and value that way of living in the world also. But it just made so much sense to me. And so from that point forward, I just made so many different choices in my life. You know, I decided to move forward with a divorce. I decided to just start going back to school and move me and my children far away from where we lived at that time, which none of that made any sense because I didn't have the resources to do any of those things. But I followed that insight, and then just so many magical things along the way supported me in that path, including, you know, at the end of my schooling, I got this inheritance that I had no idea was coming from my grandmother. And anyway, too many things to even talk about, but I was definitely supported by the universe to the rest of my calling after I had the awakening. So, so exciting.
So when you began to study traditional psychotherapy, did you know at that moment that you were going to also include alternative approaches?
I knew from the very beginning. Yeah. So when I had the awakening, I was meditating all the time, right? And I had just this knowing, and I would journal about, I'm going to be a spiritual counselor. I'm going to have a wellness center. I didn't really, again, know what any of those things meant or how to get to those things. But I remember this one beautiful meditation where I was meditating, just show me my next steps on my journey. And the word bastir came to mind, and I didn't know what that meant. And so I went online and I Googled it, and it was a school. It was a naturopathic university, actually not that far from where I lived, but in an area, you know, I hadn't been to that many times. But, you know, when I found out where it was actually on this road that I had driven by 10 years ago and just had this sense that at some point I would be living there. And so that's another magical part of the journey. But the degree that I found was the health psychology and spirituality, which I didn't know colleges did such a thing, but it was perfectly aligned to everything that was waking up for me in my body. And so I knew from the beginning that all of those things needed to go together. One of the inspirations for me, you know, back in the day was Wayne Dyer. And mm-hmm. I really like people that start out, you know, more in the scientific or more, he was a psychologist for a lot of years first, and then he had a spiritual awakening and discovered that you can't have one without the other, right? You can do psychotherapy, but without the spiritual part, you know, it just doesn't go as deep. It's not as sustainable. And so, yeah, so for me, it always went together. And in my master's degree, it was more focused on spirituality, or not as focused on spirituality. But I just knew I needed to get through, you know, I needed to get my master's as soon as possible so I could start practicing. And I knew that I could add on, you know, my own resources on the side and go to workshops and do my own learning in spirituality to combine it with the traditional psychology stuff that I was learning about, which was also interesting, of course, you know, but yeah, I had to add on my own stuff to make it more well-rounded for the kind of work I wanted to do.
So my question to you is, you know, these alternative approaches, are these considered today as still being kind of taboo in the traditional like psychotherapy community?
I would say they're definitely coming out of the closet a lot more. You know, when I started Bastir, that little bubble that I went to school and all this stuff was totally normal to us, you know, and people were, you know, they were eating organic. And this was back in 2006 when all of that stuff was kind of more beginning. But to us, it was all really normal and the only way that it could be. As I moved into my master's program, you know, people looked at me a little bit differently than the people at Bestier did. When I would talk about this stuff, they didn't understand it in the same way, but I would just hold on to it, you know, internally and know myself that, yeah, this is my path. That's okay if they don't understand it. But I do think more and more people that I talk to that are therapists, because I have friends that are therapists, you know, it's definitely, you know, everyone's encouraging their clients to meditate now. Most people are talking about mindfulness, you know, and these are kind of, to me, some of the beginner ways that people can start stepping into the more spiritual and intuitive and energetic practices. But I do think we're all waking up, and I do think this stuff is becoming more and more normal. And so a lot of my clients, like I said, that come from the tech world, they're even hearing about this stuff and maybe have even started it before they come see me, when maybe 10, 15 years ago, that definitely wasn't happening at all. So yes, I do think that's the case.
So I wanted to kind of dive in a little bit deeper to some of the therapy that you do offer. And I wanted to move into this whole notion of mindfulness therapy. Can you talk about what that is and what that looks like?
Yeah. So, and just an update, I have recently, actually last night, we revamped my whole website, which is super exciting. And so I've taken out actually the specialty pages in there that are mindfulness and anxiety and relationships. So I do all of those same things, but I haven't broken them down like that anymore. And so, I'm becoming just more and more authentic with who I really am. You know, all of those things are aspects of who I am, but my new website, really the way I work, is just called Intuitive Energy Therapy. And so it's all the same thing, you know, it's not broken down into different categories. But you know, I would say definitely for mindfulness therapy, I think most therapy is considered mindfulness therapy. That's the first step. You have to know what you're feeling before you can make any changes. And in my experience, most people are in their heads a lot of the time rather than in their body, right? And so a lot of the work we do is just even practicing slowing down enough to create the space to connect with what's inside your body and your emotions rather than your mind. So a lot of practices, I'll send people home and they'll start meditating, which gives them, you know, the space to recognize what's happening internally. And I give them the homework most of the time, most clients that come in, to place frequent check-ins throughout the day internally to create more mindful awareness of how their body's feeling, what emotions they're experiencing in the moment, what they're thinking, in an observational way rather than a judgmental, we need to change this or fix this type of thing, because again, we're not able to change anything that we're not aware of. So that's how I would explain mindfulness therapy, just really creating awareness in the body and emotions so you can change it.
So when, let's say clients come to you because they want to make changes in their lives, or maybe they want to change how they're even viewing their life. Let's say they're, you know, traditionally a negative thinker and they want to shift into a positive thinker. How do you help them shift the, I would say, energetic vibration?
Yes. Yeah. Well, and I think, you know, I think a lot of it's just kind of magical and you can't explain it, but I'll try, you know, because I think my job is to most of the time maintain a high energetic vibration for myself, so that when people come into my office, they don't even understand why, you know, they feel different or they feel better or they can see other possibilities for themselves than they were able to before they came in the office, right? I help them, you know, I think a lot of what I do, and this is not, you know, something that's even really conscious for me. It just seems to happen in session where I'm able to intuitively identify the things that are strengths for them that they might not even be aware of, and call attention to those, right? And over and over and over in a really complimentary way, because I don't think a lot of people get that in their lives, you know, from other people or themselves. And so that process also, you know, when I'm able to compliment someone or, you know, connect intuitively with what I see their potential to be and get curious with them around if they see that as possible as well, that every time we do that, it notches the energy vibration up a little bit more each time, you know, and just allowing them to get out of their heads and get into their body when they're in session. Again, a lot of times out in the world, we don't do that. And so I think even that process alone kind of ratchets someone's vibration up when they're in session, allowing them to latch onto that feeling so they get what that feels like, and then they're able to practice that more at home. Right. And so we talk about ways to practice holding that energetic vibration when they're not with me. And so they get more used to that. But I think in my office, I just give them a little taste of that by the work I do on my own energy body and, you know, connecting with their energy body and allowing them to see the beauty that they're not able to see always by themselves.
So in terms of intuitive energy therapy, does this mean that you also have studied, or do you study Reiki?
I do study Reiki. I am Reiki Master certified, and I've been working with my own energy healer intuitive for about 3 years now. So that's really fun. And for therapists, you know, you're not really allowed to touch your clients. Right. That's part of the ethical code. And it is something that I've just started bringing in maybe in the last 6 months to a year, you know, is this more energetic part of it. And it's, I'm stepping more into bringing that, you know, out loud more, right? So I've been doing it behind the scenes a little bit more, and I'm in the process of opening that up and discussing it more. And again, the launch of the website today is a big part of that process for me. And I don't know if you've heard of this whole Pluto, Saturn, Capricorn conjunction tomorrow.
No, I haven't.
Oh my gosh, it's a really big deal. Yeah, so I know it's a little side topic, but this hasn't happened since the year 1518.
Wow.
I know. So it's a huge deal. And it's around breaking historic karma and breaking historic patterns and stepping into something new and being rewarded for it. And so for me, you know, some of my patterns were staying in the conventional and staying in the safe, which is kind of being a quote unquote psychotherapist rather than really calling out what I truly do, you know, with the intuition and the energy therapy. So it's beautiful that the timing is working out as far as the website and the conjunction goes, so that I can step more into that. But yeah, to me, the energy part, you know, when I went through my awakening, it was also an awakening to energy, even though I didn't start formally studying it back then, just the understanding of it and the feeling of it. And then knowing that we are in charge of our own energy systems and our own vibration, and we can magnetize to us what we want, you know, with intention is just so amazing, right? And so introducing that concept to people, I think, is really empowering also for my clients, if that makes sense. Yeah.
It completely makes sense. I was wondering if you would be willing to share your Reiki journey in general, in terms of what attracted you to that, what was it like being attuned, and then, you know, what the receptivity has been on behalf of like your clients thus far.
Yeah. So what drew me to it is, you know, my own experience. So both of my parents actually passed away a few years ago, about 11 months apart from each other, which was, you know, that's a big deal. And I had gone through my awakening, like I said, so I was already, you know, real dialed into this whole concept of we choose our lives before we get here, including when we leave. It's not always conscious to the individual, but right. I never think it's an accident, right? And so I had a lot of philosophies in place already that helped me understand their passings. And I know that we're super connected still, and, you know, all of these things. It was like a second awakening when that happened. But it also, after my dad died, he was the second parent that passed away. I woke up to another healer And so I got some of her material, and I remember being on a plane trip to Hawaii. I was going to officiate one of my good friend's weddings, and she had this 6-CD program that I took on the airplane with me, and it happened to be 6 hours long, and it lined up perfectly with the flight. So we listened to the whole thing. And it just felt so amazing, the vibration of her voice and these guided meditations that we were doing. And so as soon as I got off the plane, I was so excited. And I told my friend, I'm like, oh my God, I have to find this person. What does she do? What is she talking about? This is so cool. And so as soon as I landed, I emailed and I made an appointment and I went in to see her. And she's a medium, she's an energy therapist, but her main modality is Reiki. And so she was the person that introduced me to it. And I had been, you know, like I said, I've been seeing her for several years, but I had never thought of myself really as a Reiki person, because I work, you know, with people's minds and their soul and I talk to them. And so it just didn't seem like something I would be super interested in, even though I really loved it. But it just kept coming up to me. And so recently I took her Reiki workshop, which was so lovely, and the energy was very high there. And so the attunement, we did it all in one weekend. That's the way she learned, and that's the way that she teaches as well. So it felt amazing. I felt the buzzing through my body again, and I felt super excited about it. And the experiences that we had at the workshop were beautiful. You know, I'd never laid hands on someone before, and we just had a few practice sessions, but I was really excited about what I was seeing and feeling when I was doing it. I'd had intuitive experiences before, but never from putting hands on someone's body. And so that was super exciting and energizing. So since then I got more inspired to bring more of that into my sessions, again, without touching people. And my clients have been very receptive to it. A lot of them are really curious about it. And a lot of times I feel like I'm almost an activator or a catalyst for people that are healers themselves as well, right? And so when I start, you know how that is.
Yeah, definitely.
You know how that is, yeah. And so when we start talking about these things, then they start exploring on their own too. And maybe they go see another energy healer, or they start studying on their own. And then they realize that is also a gift that's inside of them that they, you know, hadn't awoken to. So I think, you know, the more that I bring this out into my clients, the more that it makes the work faster also. Right. You know, I'm not a fan of just coming into therapy every week and talking for years and years and years about the same thing. I really like, you know, the intuition and the energy work just makes things go so much faster, and it's so much more fun for everyone. So does that make sense?
Makes sense.
Yeah. Great.
I think some of my questions regarding like energy therapy, just in general, as you said, with Reiki, it's more hands-on, but since you're unable to do that specifically for the clients that you have, what's the difference for you on a personal level when it's hands-on as opposed to hands-off? Like what is that experience like for you?
Yeah. So with hands-on, I'm more connected to the person and I'm seeing things in a different way. Like I would see their chakras or what's happening inside their body and get intuitive information in that way. When it's hands off, it's a little different than doing regular therapy, but it's all happening at the same time. So with the hands off, I'd be seeing the information. But in a hands-on Reiki session, what generally happens, in my experience, is the person either will hold on to that information and maybe you'll talk about it after the session, or they'll bring it up in session and kind of tell you what they're seeing, right? And so for me, what I think is really cool about the combination of the two things is that I can pick up on what's happening, but then I can intuitively guide the client to have their own understanding of their energy system by guiding them with questions rather than just saying what I'm seeing. Does that make sense?
Yes, that completely makes sense. So
okay.
when you're saying that you can intuitively pick up on what's going on, mm-hmm. I guess I have a couple of questions about that in general. Yes. Number one, how did you begin to cultivate your own intuition? Like what, through what exercises specifically allowed you to really tap into your inner voice? And then how do you help some of your own clients tap into their inner voice?
Right. Yeah, I know. And probably, I don't know if you're the same way. You probably are, I'm sure. I just love to ask you a whole bunch of questions too, because that's my favorite thing, but I'll keep it on me. Because I think, you know, people that, like, I'm sure you're the same way, you were kind of born with some of these things, right? You know, yes. And so it can be hard to break down a little bit, right? But to me, you know, I was born this way, also just super empathic and super feeling and could feel everything around me. But, and maybe you went through the same thing, but we shut it down for a while sometimes due to the world and all of those other things. And so for me, you know, waking it back up through my spiritual awakening process reminded me of the things that I was born knowing that I forgot about, that really intuition is just coming from being in the present moment, right? And so mm-hmm. when I remembered that, my soul remembered that and it woke up again, meditating really is the way to connect back in there, you know, which allows you to quiet your mind in the moment and get intuitive information. Like that's probably how it started for me again, back in the awakening time. It was mostly when I was meditating that I would get intuitive information. And for me, it's more of a knowing, it's a sensing. Sometimes I'll see things, you know, like I was talking about with the, when I found my school, it was kind of just this sign in my head that said, best year, and then you go check it out. And so I definitely think the number one exercise for intuition is slowing down, taking space, getting quiet, because especially for empathic people, we're always tuned into everyone else around us, which is super hard, you know, to get intuitive information, you know, when we're in that way, instead of just in our body connected to our own feelings. So I think meditating is the number one way. And, you know, I think another way is just asking questions. You know, I think that I would start getting quiet and then asking myself specific questions about things and then just tuning in to the feeling of the answer, right? And one might feel warm. I really like the warmth. I don't like the cold. And so that would be my answer for me. So that's another exercise that I did myself and that I teach my clients. But I would say definitely for clients or anyone listening that's working on intuition is being present, staying present, meditating, taking deep breaths, you know, tuning into your body, feeling your feet on the floor, you know, feeling your butt in your chair, connecting with what's inside of you, and then not dismissing things. Cause I think that's a really big part too. I think we're thinking and seeing things all the time, but we don't trust it, or we rationalize ourselves out of it, and our brain and our ego and fear comes in, and then we don't believe what we're getting. Because it can be really subtle. So I think that's another practice for people is getting still and quiet and then trusting the information that you're getting and writing down, you know, keeping an intuitive journal so you don't forget. And then so you can check in later with yourself and validate it rather than forgetting about it or not trusting it.
So what about for people who... And I completely understand what you're saying about meditating and getting quiet to hear the answers. But what about people who, you know, are so much so that they're in their head that mental chatter is negative? Like, how do you kind of help them overcome, I guess, that level of negativity that can really misinform them?
Absolutely. Yeah. And I think that is actually where the combo of intuition and being a therapist comes in really handy. Yes. Because I have a lot of training and experience and skills in helping people calm that down. Right. And that doesn't always happen the first session. You know, that to me takes a little bit of practice. And so as they're building that practice over time, and we kind of start layering in the intuition as they get better at quieting the mind. And so some practices there, again, you know, I give them the homework of meditating definitely every single day. I give them the homework of frequently checking in with yourself, because again, I think most people are going through the day unconscious. And then the mental chatter builds up so much, and then they feel terrible at the end of the day, and they don't even understand why, but it's because this little unconscious voice has been chattering at them all day long. And so if you're able to put in specific checkpoints every single day and practices every single day that help you become more aware of that lovely, sweet little voice that's trying to keep you safe, but is just fear.
Exactly. That,
right? Yeah. And then it's easier to practice in those moments. And the more frequently you do that, you know, it starts training your brain to intervene by itself. And then clients come in all the time. It doesn't take that long. You know, to me, this skill is maybe a few sessions, under a month, generally, when people start feeling a big difference in just their calmness, because you don't understand how much anxiety is triggered in your body by just these unconscious, automatic negative thoughts all day long. So sometimes that's the foundation, doing a practice, you know, definitely meditating, checking in with yourself all day long, shifting your thoughts when they come in. And also, you know, a way to shift that negative chatter permanently is to bring in the positive, right? And so that's another thing I encourage clients to do proactively, not just when they're in the process of shifting their thoughts, because sometimes it can be really hard to go right from a negative thought to a really, really positive thought. So you want to take it step by step. But just when you're feeling neutral as well, positively and proactively bringing in things that make you feel really good and savoring them, you know, holding that feeling in your body for as long as you can helps retrain your brain so you're having less of that mental negative chatter overall. And so all of those things are a really positive foundation for being able to still the mind enough to connect with what's underneath and your true wisdom, your intuition.
So I think I personally, this lifetime so far, I feel like a lot of people are very negative thinkers.
I agree.
And I would like to know or get your take on why it is.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think it's just, you know, the way the human condition is. You know, I think it's a collective thing because so many people are, then so many other people are. And I think it's a habit, you know, and I think we were born with these brains that are really trying to protect us and keep us safe. And so they're always on alert for danger. And a lot of people aren't even aware that that's happening, right? And so I think that just a lot of people are unconscious and they're scared because it can kind of feel scary, the world out there, a lot of the time. And so, but I think that there's also, like you and I know, there's this collective consciousness rising up that can see that and is awakening to different possibilities. And so I think more than focusing on the negative aspects that the world has, it's just remembering that we can all make a difference in our own lives, and we can all, by our own light and our own positivity and our own getting out of that collective consciousness that happens all the time, that we can raise it up a little bit as well, you know, because there's definitely pockets all over the place that are working hard to shift that vibration. And so I think that's the work of you and I, and probably most of the people that listen to this right now, you know, working extra hard, because it can feel kind of heavy to feel all of that over sometimes, right? But I don't think it's impossible to get out of it. And I think it can be really motivating, you know, because so many people I work with are empaths, and empaths just care about the world so much and just want everybody to be so happy. And so it can almost be more motivating for those kinds of people to work on themselves when they understand what a beautiful, positive impact it can have on the world around them, you know. And through that process, as they start feeling better, they do start loving themselves too and being motivated to do it, not just for the world, but for themselves. But in the beginning, it can almost be a beautiful motivation, you know, to look around and see that and feel it and understand you can be empowered to vibrate differently, and that positive vibration can help collectively, you know, continue awakening the consciousness of so many other people. It's so exciting.
It's very, you know, exciting.
Right? Yeah.
So my question to you, because I think this is something that people run into, especially in the intuitive community, what's your take on the power of affirmations? So when people are really trying to change or shift their thinking to become more positive, should they try positive affirmations? Do you think that makes an actual effect or has an effect? Or what's your take on that?
Yeah, I think that it's yes and no. You know, I think when you have an affirmation and you don't, your body doesn't believe it, nothing really happens, right? You can repeat it all day long, but if you're not, if your body doesn't believe it, if you don't have the belief system to back it up, it's really hard to move into it, you know? And so to me, again, that's where the beauty of combining a psychotherapeutic background can come in, because I can help people identify any negative beliefs, even from childhood generally, that are in the way of them believing what that affirmation is trying to tell them. Mm-hmm. And in that way, you know, doing some deeper work on that aspect can help the affirmation stick, right? I also think, you know, what if questions or being more curious or saying it in like it's already happened kind of way, those things can be a little bit more effective than affirmations to create what you want. I like to teach, a lot of clients have, you know, when they're anxious, it's what if this bad thing is going to happen? What if this negative thing is going to happen? But if you can start focusing on what if, you know, the positive thing is going to happen without understanding, you know, all the things that's going to take to make that happen in reality, but the possibility, you know, what if it could be amazing? What if things are getting better and better every day? That's really much easier for your energy system and your ego and your fear-based mind to believe, because it's not a fact. You're not trying to force anything to change. You're just coming at it with curiosity. Yeah. So, and you know, to me, beliefs are just thoughts you practice, but they're also things you have to believe, and you have to have a feeling associated with it too. So affirmations, if you're not feeling it and you're not believing it, don't work. But I do think if you do have a belief system to match up with it, then they can be effective.
Definitely. And I, you know, I have a really peculiar question for you.
Okay.
In regards to this.
Love it.
Because now I'm very curious in terms of your spirituality background. So in terms of, you know, healing someone or being a part of their healing journey, I know that you like to tackle the mind, body, and spirit, mm-hmm. you know, so that it's a complete healing. So when you said that you, if somebody's trying to utilize an affirmation and they don't believe it, so it's not going to be effective or work, and you help them kind of get to the root, you know, in terms of, you know, what's blocking them from believing that affirmation. Have you ever found that maybe the beliefs that they're holding is not necessarily due to their experiences in childhood or even through adolescence, but perhaps in a past life? And I wanted to throw that out there
because
I have heard this repeatedly in the metaphysical community, that a lot of our blocks, sometimes our mental blocks, come from, you know, our soul's, I guess, eternal journey.
Right. Yes. And I agree with that. Definitely. Yes. Especially when, you know, but I think too, you know, when people have things that occur in a past life, we're always working on them even in this life, right? And we choose our soul pod, we choose our parents, we choose our family of origin sometimes to re-trigger those things. And so it doesn't necessarily have to be initiated in this lifetime to be triggered in this lifetime, right? And sometimes, you know, it may not even be family of origin. It may be a relationship after that that triggers it, or a certain coworker or a boss at work that triggers it, you know. But I definitely think even if it has been a past life situation, if it's showing up now, there's still things that you can work on to change it, right? And you don't necessarily, I think it's fun to go back and identify what the past lives are and, you know, do some work in that area. But I don't, you know, I don't think it's always necessary in order to have a deep healing and to continue moving forward. And I think doing the deep healing and the continuing to move forward and the increasing your consciousness can change all that history as well. Does that make sense?
Yes, it can, okay. It can make sense. I've, you know, personally found a lot of people who will spend a lot of time, I would say, in
the past. Stuck? Life. Okay.
Yes. And I share the same beliefs as you do. And it's okay. Like, yes, you know, there is a starting point, but at the same time, if you're re-experiencing it in this lifetime, you know, you can learn to heal it.
Yes. And how empowering that you break that pattern for your soul. You know, it's so exciting. You don't have to spend all the time there trying to figure it out or understand it or whatever. Just move forward and empower yourself.
Exactly. Exactly.
Yes. Yes.
So I wanted to kind of jump back to this conversation of empaths, because you said a majority, or at least a good portion of your clients are empaths. And given the, I would say, very heated political, even, you know, environmental challenges that we're experiencing on the planet, how do you help some of your clients who are very empathic?
Oh, yes, I know. And it's so fun, right? And I didn't realize this for a few years into my practice. I wasn't, you know, as aware that so many people coming to me were empaths, but I just started recognizing it over the years. And I think, you know, one of the most empowering things, and like I said, I'm pretty mainstream. So I have, you know, maybe it's 50-50 people that come in that already realize that about themselves. And the other half maybe had no idea, right? And they don't understand why they're so anxious, or why when they go to Microsoft every day, it's hard for them. Like, okay, hello. But so I think the first part of that is actually just empowering them and helping them understand what it means to be an empath, and working on some self-acceptance around it, and being excited that it's actually a wonderful, amazing, exciting, powerful gift to use in the world, you know? And so I think that's the first step. And then it's really, you know, finding ways every day, practical ways, to not hide in a cave or hide at home, even though, like, we all want to do that sometimes, especially empathic introverted people, but finding ways to live in the world, you know, and be empowered and use it as your superpower, but also craft your life in a way that feeds you energetically and that allows you to, you know, utilize your gifts without being overwhelmed. So we talk a lot about self-care. We talk a lot, you know, I have a lot of people, like I said, that work in tech. So take a break sometimes. Don't be around all those machines all day long, or it's not going to feel good for you, you know. And so taking a meditation break, maybe in the middle of the day, going to take a walk outside, you know, is super important for empathic people, nature, you know, as much as you can. And just, again, understanding and noticing when your body is feeling different. That's another, you know, how the mindfulness plays. And again, as I have people all the time check in with their body, you know, how do you feel when you're at work versus, okay, how do you feel when you're in your car driving home? Okay, now how does your body feel when you walk in the door and you have a 2-year-old and your wife at home, you know? So just paying attention to how your body feels so that you can know when you're getting a little overstimulated and be able to take a break and go meditate or sit in your car for 5 more minutes before you walk in the door and say kind and loving things to yourself. So your body feels differently. You know, I have a lovely client who is an empath. She didn't realize it. And she reads a lot of news, and not anymore. Thank goodness we got over that. But she was really concerned about vaccines, you know, and that's just one of the issues that we could all freak out about all day long, right? Because there's lots of bad stuff and pharmaceutical companies and corporations and the environment, and all of her feelings were so valid, right? She's terrified for her children and for the planet, and how, you know, the corporations, they're making them more and more mandated in states, and maybe adults are going to have to take them at some point. And all of that is true, right? But she was spending so much time looking at it and thinking about it and worrying about it. And that doesn't help, right? It was not making her happy. It wasn't helping her at home. You know, her kids were noticing it. She was super anxious all the time. And so empaths, you know, we love the world and we want to help the world. And so we're in our heart chakras a lot. And they're really big and they're beaming out to the world. And so for me, a lot of what I talk to my clients about is, instead of being in that heart chakra, which is super developed, a little bit overdeveloped, I think, for empaths who've had lifetimes and lifetimes and lifetimes mm-hmm. of experiences. So we develop compassion for everybody, you know, in every different experience, right? So it's wonderful, but it's overdeveloped so much sometimes that empaths can worry too much about the world, which doesn't help the world, because then their energy lowers and they're not able to give out where they're actually supposed to give out that energy to their family, to their job, to the people in their sphere, right? And so in order to even make the change that she wants to make and stay empowered doing it, because it's not about not taking action in the world, but it's just about the lens that you're looking at it through, and trusting that even if it looks ugly, you know, everything is in divine order, right? Everyone has a soul. They're in charge of it. All of this is happening for some reason that we can't understand. We all chose to come here. This is not an accident. We didn't choose to come here to feel horrible and awful and worry about all of these things, right? You know, and even what's happening in the pharmaceutical industry, it's here to wake a bunch of people up. It doesn't have to be a negative thing. And so sitting more, you know, teaching her to sit more instead of in her heart chakra where she's worried about everything, sitting more in her abdomen, connecting to her authentic feelings, which are in her second chakra rather than her heart chakra, tuning into that, you know, and therefore she can tell, okay, maybe I've been on Google for too long. I'm getting a little bit anxious. I need to go do something that makes me feel good right now. So that when I do want to write the senator a letter about vaccines or whatever, my energy's high, because that is going to help them read my words better anyway. And then I'm going to be able to create more change than if I send it in an angry or a negative or a sad or a worried type of energy. Because the positive energy helps create change so much more than that fear, worry energy. Right. So does that make sense? Yeah. So it's really taking breaks and balance and not looking at things too much and doing a really, really, really good job of taking care of your own energy and making sure your environment's lovely and you're not hanging around with toxic people and, you know, all of those types of things. It's a holistic plan in not worrying about the environment, you know.
Exactly. And so people who are empaths, as you said, tend to kind of carry the burdens of the world within just their own energy. Right. And I was wondering, you know, do you provide them tools to help kind of like clear what's going on with them at an energetic level?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I would say a lot of the time we talk about gathering root energy, you know, through the earth, like planting your feet on the ground and just imagining roots growing into the earth and sucking up all that beautiful, lovely white light into your body, opening up your crown chakra and letting the light in through the crown to keep your body really filled up with light. And that way, you know, you're worrying less about the world. I think, again, just noticing when you're feeling that in your body and meditating. There's lots of beautiful meditations using energetic visualizations that we talk about as well. Like, you know, I like this one that I was doing the other day where it's just meditating quietly, following your breathing, and then paying attention to anything that feels icky in your body, and then energetically sending it out to the universe, you know, far, 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 far away from your body. And then imagining it however it looks to you to be recycled, right? It can be in a little washing machine. It can like dance around out there. It can be cleaned off with some Windex, whatever you want to do, but send it far away and until it looks really beautiful and clean and sparkly and shiny. And then just imagining it all flowing back into your body and lighting you up again. And it's gone and it's transformed, right? So instead of worry, it's positive energy to help the planet instead of impact it in a negative way. So yeah, that's what I would say was one practice.
That's very helpful. I think to be perfectly honest with you, I think there are people who are very spiritual people who are looking to find, you know, a therapist who is really in alignment with what they believe, or at least open-minded enough to receive what they're going to say during their sessions.
Yes.
Super helpful. But I also wanted to kind of go back again to this whole idea of the intuitive voice, primarily because I wanted to understand from your own perspective and from your own experiences, what is the intuitive voice and where in your own beliefs does this come from completely?
Right. Yeah. I know. Such a complicated question.
It is.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. So to me, you know, and it all can feel like one thing. It can be your higher self. I think it's really the voice of source energy, the universe. That's where we all come from. I think it always is positive and loving to us, you know. It doesn't have to say positive and loving things all the time, but it's leading you to your higher self. It always knows what your potential is, and it can see that in a much bigger, broader way than you're able to from your limited human perspective. Yeah, so that's what I would say. It's source energy speaking through you, working on helping you awaken your consciousness and evolve spiritually.
So have you ever had clients who come from a very religious background?
Yes.
Uh-huh. How do you, initiate this type of conversation about utilizing, I would say, your intuitive voice as your guidance?
That's a great question, I think, too, right? And it's really speaking to everyone in their own language, you know? And so for somebody really religious, which I have had several clients, you know, someone Catholic or someone Jewish or just, you know, evangelical Christian. I've worked with all types of people. And so whatever their language is, and I can generally tell that by working with them, right? Even in the first or second session, sometimes it's really just joining and connecting and getting to know someone. So just really listening to them, they'll usually say whatever that voice sounds like to them, whether, you know, they say it's my gut instinct, right? Or whether they say it's Jesus or God or whatever else. And so when I'm able to connect with, and I can ask, you know, the universe before they come in, I'm always asking for guidance and for help. And so even asking the universe to highlight for me, you know, what words that I need to channel through to speak in this client's language so they understand what I'm saying. So it generally isn't very difficult to attune to whatever word is going to work best for that client in session, right? Yeah. And so, yeah, it could be God, it could be a gut instinct, or, you know, I do think intuition is becoming more and more mainstream too, right? I think it's everywhere. I think people are, even religious people, I think are becoming more open to this idea and whatever they want to call it. Yeah, I think it's becoming more commonplace.
So I wanted to ask you this earlier, and I think I just completely blanked it, but I wanted to know, were you raised in a religious household or no?
Yeah, that's a great question. I was raised in a household where we went to Catholic church, but it was mostly, you know, we lived in a very cute small town and the church was a couple blocks away from us. So I think mostly it was for the community aspect of it. My dad really liked to be, you know, do the spaghetti dinners and just connect with people at church. And so we went there most Sundays and I was confirmed and I did First Communion and all of those things, but definitely never felt anything spiritual back then. I really liked the stained glass. The churches were beautiful.
Yeah. I love those too.
I know. I love them still. It just feels really sacred, right? But definitely I tuned out all of that. It wasn't, you know, it just didn't make any sense to me, right? And I went through catechism and so my parents, my dad, not very believing. His mom actually was the one in my closest circle growing up as far as relatives who's definitely woo-woo. She was, she co-founded a Unity church in her town where she lived, and she was always into angels and crystals and Seth. And so me and her actually used to play like intuitive games when we were younger, and she'd have angel cards and like all of these super cool things, but I never saw her that much. She mostly lived in California when I was growing up. And so But it was great having her around. So I knew that I wasn't super weird, even though I wasn't very into those things back then. And my mom was a little bit spiritual, but she wasn't super open about it. She didn't talk about it that much. But she did, when I was growing up, she'd have books around by Dan Millman. Oh, like The Peaceful Warrior, yes. You know, those kinds of things, all of that good stuff. Yeah, but it wasn't like she was kind of talking about it or teaching about it very much. So it did kind of feel like it was up to me later in life to discover it on my own.
So when you had your awakening then, there, you didn't really have like this inner conflict between like your upbringing, you know, in Catholicism with, you know, spirituality.
I didn't. And I think I'm really lucky in that regard, right? Because it can be more complicated for people that have a little bit. Did you have that conflict or were you?
I definitely did have that conflict. I was raised in a very Christian, you know, semi-Pentecostal, I'll put it that way, household for, and I went to church all the time. So yes, definitely coming into contact with something that is completely in opposition to traditional, you know, scripture is really challenging for most people to overcome.
Totally. Well, and I think that's why, you know, my sense when I started coming out was that I'm this bridge, right? So I think even people, you know, in that, kind of religion. Like I said, I look pretty normal and I'm real nice and I don't dive right into all of it. And so I think, I think that kind of helps me with those, you know, people that believe differently than I do. And I go really slow and I'll ease into things, you know, over time. Does that make sense? So really gentle about it.
Yes, definitely.
Yeah.
Because I realize that for most people who come from a religious background, the terminology associated with God and life and et cetera is very different in religion as opposed to the terminology that's utilized in spirituality. I mean, like you used earlier, God source energy or source energy. It's so different for most people to kind of reconcile.
Right. Yeah, which is good, which is, like I said, probably the same way you do. I channel in whatever is needed, you know, for that individual and that client, you know, in that moment and able to speak those words, you know, in their language, even though we're talking about the same thing. Does that make sense?
It completely makes sense. I'm always just curious about, you know, people who come from these very strict backgrounds, you know, what their receptivity is to all of this new age information, because not everyone is receptive. I think there's sometimes some hostility towards the fact in the new age, if you will, people don't usually call, you know, God, or their conception of creation is just so different. It's just so far removed from being, for lack of a better word, humanistic, you know.
Absolutely. Like
in traditional religion, most people believe they're praying to a person as opposed to energy. It's just so different, I think. It must be a very interesting challenge for you.
Well, and I don't think it really is. I mean, I hear what you're saying for sure. But what I've experienced in my practice is the more that I've worked on myself, the more vulnerable and authentic and open I am with who I really am and what I'm about. And the more my vibration has increased over the years, I don't attract anybody to me that's not ready to hear what I say. Honestly, you know what I mean? They just don't come into my office, right? They're going to go see somebody else probably, you know, and if it does, it's not a good fit, which, you know, happens sometimes and they'll move on. But I do tend to attract people. I think on a soul level, we already know, right? Even when I get an email or a call for someone, they don't reach out to me unless their soul can feel a resonance with, you know, even if they're scared to open up to that side, which, because I have a lot of people that are religious and you can tell they're so excited by this stuff, right? And the people that aren't ready yet on a soul level, they're just not coming to me. But the people that are ready, even if their consciousness doesn't know it, maybe for a couple months, you know, yeah. Does that make any sense? It's just an unconscious soul knowing type of thing where the people that are ready for even a gentle reminder of who they really are come to me, and the people that aren't go somewhere else.
No, I completely understand that. And So for the listeners today who are really interested in connecting with you and wanting to book a session with you, how can they find you?
Yeah, so my website, like I said, brand new today, so exciting. It's just my name, ShaynaOlmsted.com. My email address and my phone number are on there. I'm also on Instagram. I have a lot of fun, you know, making little videos sometimes or putting things on Instagram. So that's another good way to connect with me.
Wonderful. And for everyone who's listening, I will have all of that information below in the description section. And I want to thank you so much for joining me on today's episode, Shayna. It's been wonderful listening to you, and I'm excited for listeners to connect with you.
It's been so fun. Thank you so much. And I hope you have a wonderful day.
Thanks. You as well. Take care. Bye-bye.
You too. Bye.